Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DCU. I'm a son of a gun. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gunn, and our lawyer isn't here today, so we get to go buck wild.
Here we go. We're going to be talking about Season 2, Episode 5 of Peacemaker, Back to the Suture. So if you haven't watched it on HBO Max, do go watch it. We're going to spoil it here, but I'll tell you what, not much to spoil. Shortest episode of the season so far, as Peacemaker goes to have a heart-to-heart in the park with Harcourt, trying to find out if she felt anything in their party boat hookup that happened between seasons. It's a trap, and he knows it's a trap, and in fact, he gets trapped, brought back to Argus headquarters, gets the shit beat out of him. Rick Flagg reveals that there's a secret plan and a reason that he wants Peacemaker's portal, which we'll talk more about in a second. And then ultimately, this leads to Peacemaker leaving through the portal and closing the door behind him, so he has technically left Earth, the DCU, forever to go over to the DC2, where everybody loves him. Meanwhile, back in the DCU, the other things that are going on is Adebayo accidentally has a prostitution conversation, and we get the most Looney Tunes thing ever as Red St. Wild hunts down Eagly, leading to the revelation that Eagly is, in fact, the Prime Eagle. So it is unfortunate, I will start off saying, our lawyer is not here because, as I mentioned last episode, Pete has been pushing this there is multiple eagles theory since the very first episode of this season. This episode, it's not just a lie. There were multiple eagles. We watched an eagle die who was not Eagly, and then Eagly is, in fact, the Prime Eagle, and that's crazy.
It's crazy. It opened up so many questions for me. First off, is Pete right and we're wrong? That feels problematic.
That seems beyond the pale, I would say.
From a precedent setting, I feel like I'm in deep concern about that. But secondarily, are all eagles like Eagly? Can they do stuff? Can they eat out of the fridge? The eagles are just, like, basically humans, like stately humans?
Well, no, I think the idea here is that Eagly is a different eagle. He's in charge of all the other eagles. He is the Prime Eagle, in fact.
So you're saying you think he's always been the Prime Eagle, and that's why he's able to be so human?
Yes, exactly. And that crazy lie that Economos threw out in the earlier episode to try to trick Red St. Wild was, in fact, 100% accurate, which, I don't know, I think is funny. Like, that's a pretty funny bit. You see, I'm sure.
Who are these other eagles? They don't have agency, so he just sent an eagle buddy to die?
Yeah, he sent a decoy eagle to die, and then
it's not a decoy. That's a living eagle.
I'm saying he sent a decoy. It's like how leaders of countries have decoys that kind of look like them to draw assassins. It's the same thing here, but with
I thought you meant like a decoy of like a duck, which I just want to be clear aren't real.
Just are you
so
sure?
If you're worried, I know it looks like they're very still ducks, but they're actually likely plastic.
Huh. Okay, so that explains a lot of stuff. First of all, how it's been so easy to catch them, and second of all, why they taste terrible.
I love a decoy à l'orange. very good to eat out. Very fancy.
While we are talking about this, though, we have been talking a lot about Red St. Wild, the whole cultural appropriation and what they're going to do with that. We find out this episode pretty much exactly what's happening, which he's probably dead or at least horribly mangled at best. His finger gets ripped off. He gets ripped apart by the eagles. I will say, I guess that's good. They still never really address the whole cultural appropriation thing, but at least he kind of got punished for what he's doing. And
yes,
the whole sequence, it was crazy Looney Tunes. Like, it was like not in a figurative way, but a literal way, with first, I think it was a coyote eating the rat that had been poisoned, which was straight up like Wile E. Coyote and subbing the Roadrunner for Eagly. And then the whole thing with that enormous gun, I'm forgetting what it's called, but it's actually like a real gun that they got for the show that is actually that long and big, was 100% like Elmer Fudd chasing down Bugs Bunny.
That gun was unwieldy at best. I can't imagine. I want to see shots of him like huffing that case all through the woods, the car. Like, I want to get catching an Uber. Like, these are the kind of scenes I think we need in an episode that I'm going to say is a little light on stuff.
Was it at a sub 40 minutes? Was it light on stuff? I don't know.
I'm going to call it light on stuff. Even the 40 yes. minutes felt a little light on. Those minutes went by faster than regular mm-hmm. minutes. You know, a New York minute? I live New York minutes, which are technically nice. Longer than regular minutes.
So I will tell you, I've been thinking about this a little bit, and obviously, like, I feel very strongly about television and the... I've gotten flamed for this, for saying this, but, like, the structure of television and the structure of seasons, etc. But... I believe very strongly, like, and we've talked about this before, you and me, Justin, though I don't know on this specific podcast, about how the joy of streaming I have always felt is you can do episodes however long you want. You don't need to have this, like, 45 to 50 minute structure, even though 45 minutes traditionally has been how long drama is, and there's rhythms and reasons for that in terms of how they put together a script. But, like, if you're just going to do a half hour episode, that's fine. And if an hour and a half episode, I guess that's fine as well. Like, there doesn't need to be consistency in a season. So I will laud Peacemaker for that, in terms of not feeling like they have to hit 50 minutes just because that's how much a drama episode runs in the streaming era at this point. But at the same time, like we talked about the last episode, not a lot happened the last episode and not a lot happened this episode. At the very least, I think they could have smushed these two episodes together and gotten through things much quicker, to the point we all know they're going to get to, which they get to at the end of the episode, which is Peacemaker going over to the DCU and traveling through that portal.
Yeah, it this has such middle of the season energy, like the dip point as you get out of like the setting up the cool stuff for the season and then getting to the cool stuff at the end of the season. This is literally these two episodes are the middle episodes, and they are the ones where you're like, oh, more should be happening here. We need a spike of something in here, rather than just reaffirming ideas that we already know when it comes to Harcourt, Peacemaker, and everyone else, basically. The only real new fact is that Sasha Bordeaux has robots. Mm-hmm. She has robot stuff.
Yes. Well, you, like we talked about, big fan of Sasha Bordeaux, and in DC Comics, she is a cyborg. She was not originally a cyborg when she was introduced, but not to get too in the weeds here, there's this whole event called Infinite Crisis that happens that she was very much involved in, and part of it is this satellite created by Batman called Brother Eye starts activating these sleeper agents called OMAX, which basically turn them into, like, people with robot skin stuff on them in order to take down all the superhumans in the world. That happens to Sasha Bordeaux, but she is strong enough to fight back, and she becomes an OMAC on the side of the good guys and is very instrumental in taking down Brother Eye. Subsequently, she takes over an organization called Checkmate, which is related but not the same as Argus. They're sort of like literally a check on Argus at certain points,
yeah.
And she has remained a cyborg in the DC universe. So, like, not to get too in the weeds, that little
We're in the weeds?
Yes, we're very much. This podcast should be called In the Weeds, 100%. But I do wonder, like, my brain did immediately start going on this tiny little detail about, like, oh, yeah, she actually is a cyborg, which I don't think in terms of this episode means much more than, like, oh, cool, fun detail about her. We get a joke from Economos, and this shows why Rick Flagg is relying on her so much. That there has been an overarching plot in the DCU about what do we do about all these metahumans that ran through not Creature Commandos, but sort of like in the fallout of the Suicide Squad and Creature Commandos and Peacemaker season one, going right. into very much they had those discussions in Superman. They've had those discussions in this season of Peacemaker as well. So it does make me wonder if, like, the whole cyborg of it all is pointing to some sort of brother eye, OMAC type thing that might happen in the future of the DCU.
That's really interesting, and I wonder how that plays into the, I'm thinking about how that plays into the larger themes of this season, mm-hmm. because it does feel, this has been like an emotional journey for Peacemaker himself. It feels like looking at past sins, dealing with the things and that you've done in the past and moving forward. That feels unrelated to that, but maybe it is something that they want to do in the main going forward DCU that would start here in the TV show as something to kick off at the end of this season.
Well, yeah, that's exactly how I'm thinking about it. Like, I don't think there's a world, like you're saying, I don't think thematically it makes sense to be like, and here's a Brother Eye satellite, and here's an OMAC invasion of the DC universe towards the end here, because our focus, like you said, is Peacemaker. It's definitely on this other dimension versus the DCU, whether they're going to come into direct conflict or there's just a conflict in the DC too. I guess we'll see. But yeah, it's the sort of thing that I could see, like, there's a secret TV project that James Gunn has teased a lot that is coming, like, in active development now that we don't know about. They haven't announced, and I believe it involves Frank Grillo. So it feels like that could be part of it. That's why they're laying in Sacha Bordeaux here. So I think we have appreciated so far in the very young DCU that they throw in these things, but they're just kind of there. They're not like, we're teeing up the next project so much as we're laying a little groundwork and we will pick it up, but you don't have to worry about it here. Later on, we'll reiterate it in a way that makes sense for that future thing.
Yeah, I mean, definitely appreciating that. I think it's interesting with this because something we've talked about a little bit is how much time Argus is getting in this season. Mm-hmm. And it feels like we don't need, like, the Sacha Bordeaux character up until this episode. We've been like, what's the point of this? It feels like it's a little bit of duplicating Flag in a lot of ways. So it does feel like this must be meaningful somehow. We don't need to have, like, the raid on Peacemaker's house. We had the Tim Meadows character and a bunch of randoms be wiped out. Like, we don't need Flag, Sacha Bordeaux, and all these other characters that are just sort of hanging around.
Well, and I'd agree also, including this episode, even with the cyborg reveal, that we don't get much more about Sacha Bordeaux other than she is upset that Rick Flag beats the crap out of Peacemaker, and then they seem to have a flirtation after that. So maybe there's a romantic thing going on. I don't know. But, like, there's not much going on with this character as of yet.
Definitely. And even the romantic thing, I was like, okay, the show is telling us this, but it doesn't mean anything yet. I'm sure it will be about something, but what? Rick Flag is Peacemaker's antagonist because Peacemaker killed Rick Flag Jr. But, like, and we get the funeral at the top of this episode is the cold open. And it feels like we're really putting it out there and using that to call into question Harcourt's whole thing. Mm-hmm. But it also feels like she still cares for Peacemaker. She saves him from being killed by Sacha Bordeaux here. And, like, I just don't know. This show's doing something that a lot of shows do where it's like, does she really love him? And it's like, I think so. Otherwise, if she just doesn't love him, I'm like, well, then this is just bad. This is just a bummer. Like, it's a rom-com being like, hey, he doesn't seem to be able to get his shit together. And it's like, I bet he will by the end, though. I bet he will.
Probably. After he's hurt a lot, they'll hit a place where, like, maybe they get together or maybe they've sort of hit a sort of detente about whatever happened to the party boat. I also think we're going to get a flashback of the party boat. Maybe next episode would be my guess, not to jump ahead. Mm. But
great call.
There's a bunch of things that I want to talk about there. One thing, just to talk about, like, the whole romance thing while we're staying on that for the moment. Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, these people just need to talk. And when they do talk, like when we get the scene towards the end where Adebayo is like, I heard you tried to kill Peacemaker. And she's like, yeah, I was actually saving them. Adebayo has some quote like, you're exactly the person I thought you were. And I was like, oh, okay, good. We can move on from there. And I think the same conversation just needs to happen with Peacemaker and Harcourt. And then we can kind of, like, go forward. But we got to stay in this dramatic stasis. So there is a plot reason for Peacemaker to leave and go to the DC2. This leads to the next thing that I want to say that we've got to bouncing off of a little bit, but I don't think I've explicitly said on the podcast, is not to get too strong about this, but Peacemaker pretending to be somebody else, even if it is himself from another universe, and entering a romantic relationship with Emilia Harcourt from the DC2 without telling her, is sexual assault. So, like, and this has been discussed in a lot of other shows, and it's been a thing that's come up often in, like, Twins and Clones and whatever and other sci-fi things. And
the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
100%. That's exactly what I was talking about in the movie.
Got a lot of people mix them up, him and Danny DeVito, in that movie.
Yeah, and it's been a frequent conversation online, so it's not like it's a secret or anything like that. So it's surprising to see the show be like, let's go in that direction. And hopefully they discuss it at any point, but I guess we'll see.
My prediction is, I mean, this is a little bit tarnished by the way they've done Michael Rooker's character, where it comes to trusting the show to know what's happening with the audience as they watch it. But I believe that in the next episode, you'll see Peacemaker. We'll see Peacemaker talk to Harcourt, the DC2 Harcourt, and tell her that he is from another dimension. That's my prediction.
Yes, I'd certainly hope so. But like you said, I think, like, more and more we're starting to get things in this show that are just like, what? It's just funny, is the impression. I'd throw out the joke that John Economos makes about keeping a picture of the mangled body of Sacha Bordeaux on his phone was gross. Like, another gross joke in the episode.
Well, it was gross and also confusing. For like, it just word-wise, I was like, when it hit my ear, I was like, what? Oh, now it, like, so my reaction was like, what? Oh, yuck. Bye. So, like, it was a strange progression of a joke to be.
Well, particularly because they, not to keep jumping all over the place, but, like, particularly because I think a lot of the stuff has crystallized this season with John Economos, like the thing about him saying even meeting eyes with another person is an act of heroism. I was like, okay, that's a funny thing that also gets to a character thing that is very specific about him. Him being like, fuck, at the end of the episode when they're all going to save Peacemaker from the other dimension. Like, rather than lumping on him for a bad guy, letting him be the one that is the mouthpiece for the humor works a lot better and gets to him being like, I'm owning my problems and trying to grow from them, but it's really hard for me. So the line after that about, like, what, I don't control my brain was okay, but
I'm not the one who made my brain.
Right. That's good. But everything before that, exactly the reaction that you were talking about.
Good.
No, I just wanted to jump back and talk about the Rick Flag of it all. And this is, again, a little segment we like to call In the Weeds. And this is, like, the craziest In the Weeds that you possibly can be. But they did reveal a thing that I feel like went under the radar in this episode. Because certainly, like, the first time I watched it, I didn't catch on to it. It wasn't until the second time that I really picked it up. Where when he is talking to Bordeaux and Bordeaux is upset, he gives this whole speech, and I'll read some of it, but he's like, perhaps you want to say I'm too close to the situation because Peacemaker killed my son. I should consider recusing myself. Well, despite how it may seem, my priority is protecting the people of the United States. I need to find that dimensional rift, not only so we can avoid another incident like the one in Metropolis, but for a greater purpose, benefit us all. I can't say I didn't enjoy pounding on that punk, but thrills were not my motivation. So just to, like, draw a couple of things there. He is drawing a line that James Gunn has already talked about in terms of, like, portals are clearly key to whatever is going on in the DCU.
Yeah.
That was something that Lex Luthor created in Superman. That's something that we're dealing with in a very different way here in Peacemaker. And this is the In the Weeds part. The thing that I really didn't notice is right before Bordeaux comes in, Rick Flag opens up a file on his computer and starts reading it.
Oh, yes.
It is. We really linger on the text. It's hard to read, and it's blurry, and I couldn't read all of it. But the short version is what I took away from it, what I did, like, pour through it last night when I was rewatching the episode, is it seems like Argus is experimenting with dimensional travel and can't quite get it to work. Like, that's right. Kind of the short version. They have a lot of fake sci-fi technical terms in there. But essentially, they're trying to figure out a way to do dimensional travel, not just between dimensions, but in their own dimension between different places, like teleportation. But the only way they've been doing it, based on the literature that he's looking at, it starts to degrade the molecules of the thing that's being sent through exponentially the more you send it through. So essentially, like, they can do it. They've been doing it with objects. They can send an object from one place to another. But the more they do it, the more it gets likely the thing is going to dissolve or disintegrate or explode or something like that. Like, same as Lex Luthor's portal when Mr. Terrific is complaining about, like, you never do this because these things always degrade. And we see that happen in Superman. Right. They're trying to do the same thing. So the end result of this is it seems like Rick Flagg wants to go after Peacemaker, not because he hates Peacemaker and not because he wants to shut down the portal, but because he wants to use it to make their portals better.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Yes, I mean, I was feeling this as well in the, I guess, two episodes back when they were about to raid Peacemaker's home. They were like, oh man, this guy sucks. Let's get him. And then the portal thing and the energy is what animated all of the Argus big attack, big siege on his house. So it definitely feels like they're more about the technology. Mm-hmm. But from a, like, looking forward to these last few episodes, what that means, obviously they want it, but does that mean that something, I feel like something bad is going to happen with the portal to further antagonize Argus? Like, perhaps, we have always talked about Peacemaker learning the truth about this other dimension, how it's, you know, Earth X, Nazi Earth, whatever we want to call it. But what if it's actually the flip of that and people from that Earth invade the DCU? Mm-hmm. So I do think, with all this portal talk, I feel like that has to have something dramatically happen to it before the end of the season. And it feels like that dimension invading Peacemaker's actual dimension, Argus's dimension, would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure. I think that makes a lot of sense too, because, like, we know the next three episodes, episode 6 through 8, are supposed to be crazy. They're secret. James Gunn didn't provide them to critics, didn't even show his own PR agent or anything like that. All the talk about is, oh, this is totally wild. And granted, we've
talked
about
it. Really calls into question James Gunn's relationship with his PR agent. Are they close? What's the deal? Because, like, if you're not showing a close peer,
best friend,
you're,
best friend.
I would think. I mean, yeah. He keeps us on the outside, and we're pretty close to Jimbo, Daddy. And if he's keeping PR Dave, which is his name, out of the loop, like, who is he telling?
Yeah, that's what I want to know, too, and I think that's what we're all wondering, and I think we're going to find out about his relationship with his PR agent in the last three episodes. But my point is that, like,
I hope he's a character.
What you're saying, I think if we go to the DC2 for the last three episodes, that's not much. But if we have, they go to the DC2, find out it's bad, DC2 finds out about the DCU and comes back here, that gives it more narrative momentum. Contradicting that a little bit is the discussion we had about the last two episodes not pushing things forward much. So I guess we'll see. One last thing I want to throw out there, which is way too far in terms of speculation, but with this secret TV show that may or may not include Frank Grillo, I could certainly see it being like a dimension hopping thing, like Sliders, but in the DCU or something like that, so that they get to explore that whole idea of parallel dimensions a little more. Maybe he leads not Task Force X Suicide Squad or Task Force M Creature Commandos. We get a third team there. Like, what was Rip Hunter's, not the Legends of Tomorrow, but like Rip Hunter's is like the Time Somethings.
Yeah.
Time Masters. Is that it?
Time Masters, I think, is right.
Yes. Yeah. Which is not exactly the same thing, but I could see them doing something like that. Like maybe that's even what the Booster Gold TV show became. So you have Booster Gold leading a team through different dimensions to explore them working for Rick Flag. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out of here.
And not to big up a theory that has literally no grounding anywhere, but that would make sense. The way that James Gunn has talked about this makes it feel like an out-of-the-box idea, which is what that is, where they can have a ton of guest stars, lots of stuff happening all the time.
Dogs. And that's the thing, is we could do it like Dog City style, like Jim Henson's Dog City, where they're all puppets. They're dog puppets. Everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. And
Definitely. That's a good thing to keep in the podcast, both the dog barking and your explanation of Dog City. Because that's what we had planned there.
Yeah. Well, what else should we talk about? Or do you want to say anything more about this theory now that the dog has gone down?
Well, no, I think that I like it. I will just say I think it's a good theory, and it helps make sense of a lot of this stuff, because at this point in this season, there's so much stuff. We were very positive about the emotional heft of Peacemaker's story here and the story of this second season for the first like three episodes. And now we've gotten into a place where the show is putting so much emphasis on not that and other things. This episode, I felt like, was better about bringing us back into Peacemaker's story. And I did think the beginning of this episode was really good. I liked that scene. But it feels like they're shifting off of Peacemaker for a reason. And the reason is not clear at all right now.
Yeah.
When it comes to the dimension stuff, the Argus stuff that we're talking about. So maybe that tends to give me a lot of, it makes me want to believe what you're saying.
A couple of things more specifically about the episode I'll throw out. First of all, in the scene where Peacemaker visits Harcourt, this has been consistent over both seasons of Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad, but I forget this. I like the fact that he's competent. Like,
yeah,
you know, he is actually good at doing this stuff, the way that he hides, he knows it's a trap, he figures it out. They let him do it because, like, he's a kind of a dumb oaf of a guy, so you would expect that he would just walk up and get trapped or fight back, but he knows what's going on and he is good at doing what he does. So I appreciated seeing that. And that whole scene, too, like, there are a bunch of fun details. Tim Meadows, always very funny, just eating a snow cone. That
big
was cute.
Bites.
Big bites of the snow cone.
Great nickname for him, Big Bites.
Yes, so that was a fun scene, and there was something else about Peacemaker specifically I was going to throw up, but I don't remember.
Well, just on that, I do think that it seems so foolish watching this and being like, yes, have him be good at this. This is the thing he does. When and let him be dumb about other stuff, or even be dumb while he's doing a thing he's good at. So many other shows and movies are like, this guy's funny. Let's make him bad at everything. And it's like, he doesn't need to be an absolute failure at every part of life. People could be good at stuff and still funny and failing at the same time they're succeeding. It's actually much more interesting.
Yeah. What else? Oh, the other thing that I was going to throw out there, this is just a little thing that I'm sure everybody caught on, but when he eventually does go to the DC2, very nice shot of him finally getting a jetpack. That was something that he wanted in season one, him flying with the top trio and Eagly. I also, by the way, liked that he was like, oh, this is Eagly, my sidekick Eagle. And Keith was like, sounds good, let's go. Which establishes that Eagly is not in that dimension, but also just rolling with it and going forward. Very fun. But the kaiju that they're attacking is the same kaiju from Superman, which I assume partially was like, we could reuse the CG model and it's just like, people will recognize this. But it also does raise some questions in my mind, at least about like, how the timelines are lining up in the DC2 versus DCU, but I don't know if that matters.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt there's going to be a larger connection drawn there outside of the fact that, like, look, it's the thing you already sort of know. But yeah, I like that. We get some sick November rain over the course of a lot of this, which is a nice needle drop right in line. And while we're talking needle drops, I do want to say, I feel like I've been watching the opening credits for each episode as they come, not skipping past it. And honestly, it gets better every week. Mm-hmm. It gets better every episode as a way of reminding us of what's happening without having to do an exhaustive previously on. It's such a nice emotional way to do it as opposed to being very explicit with, like, here's the thing with this dimension. It's a little weird in some ways. Like, we get the vibe from the opening credits, and that carries us into the episode in a really nice way.
Well, and also, as the season goes on and more information is revealed, the various beats become clearer. Like, there's Vigilante's mom is in the opening credits, and I think she's been in it every episode so far, but hasn't showed up here. So that's going to mean more once we actually see her on the show. But, like, this episode, that shot of Peacemaker and Harcourt coming close to each other, he touches her face, and then they move away from each other. I was like, oh, that is very affecting now that I know the way the season is going. 100%. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, which I have not noticed at all, but people online have noticed, they change the credits every episode. Like, there are slightly different shots based on who they're focusing on in the particular episode. And I got to be frank, like, as much as I appreciate that effort, I don't know why you would do that despite the discussion we just had, because, like, I haven't noticed it at all.
Well, especially it being, I haven't noticed it either, it being subtle enough to not draw our attention does make it feel like a subconscious play. Mm-hmm. And I guess obviously they know that some people will notice who are exhaustively rewatching.
Yeah. But if it not me who paused on a computer screen, on screen, zoomed in on it, and then transcribed it, you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Those losers.
You a freak. And if you a freak isn't noticing it, then who's it for? Is it meant to slide under the radar?
I don't know. Maybe it's just for them. Maybe it's one for them, you know?
Ah, really nice.
Yeah. What Everybody's else in the episode? Any other things we should talk about? We didn't really talk about the Vigilante Adebayo thing. I thought that was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Not much happens there, really. He says maybe I can meet another me in there, which makes me think, oh, that happening for sure.
100%. Or he's dead. Like, either he meets another him in there and they're exactly the same. That's my theory. Or he's 100% dead in that dimension, which I think is the popular online theory. I know a lot of people were affected by him crying in the episode, and his whole thing is that he's even, and he has some line in the first season about, like, he doesn't have human emotions the same way other people do. So I'm sure that did affect people. For me, I was like, all right. That also read as, like, a joke to me, because he's so sad because his best friend, who actually doesn't care about him and is actually best friends with Eagly, left for another adventure without him. So maybe
it's
that
hard
was not
to say. It's a tough character because almost everything he says is a joke. So to flip pretty hard without a lot of run up into him being hyper emotional and meant to take it earnestly is a little tricky. But I mean, like, I believed the sadness. Whether or not what the point of it was a little unclear, I guess. What do we think about Michael Rooker? Like, is he dead? Eagles eat him?
I think so. Yeah. So two things about it. One, I could totally see him come back as, like, towards the end of the season, same as Weasel in the Suicide Squad was, like, clearly dead and then clearly alive. You could have him be, like, mangled and coming back or something like that, and that would be totally fine. But also, this was a thing that they talked about on the official Peacemaker podcast, and I think we've talked about it here before, but I don't remember. I'll just reiterate it if not. So they had somebody else as Red St. Wild. We don't know who it is, but they shot most of, if not all of the scenes for Red Saint Wild with this other actor. It wasn't working out. And they talked about it more on this most recent podcast where James Gunn sat down with Michael Rooker and was like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to bind here. You can come on set and help us out and have the small part, or we could just wait and you have a meatier part later down in the DCU. And Michael Rooker apparently was like, I trust you, whatever you think is best. And after talking about it, ultimately, because they were such a bind, apparently, with, like, they had to shoot the stuff really quickly and they needed somebody reliable, and Michael Rooker knows what he's doing on set, the agreement they came to is, like, he can come and do this, but they're going to put him in a ridiculous costume so that they can bring him back later on in another role in the DCU. So the implication of the conversation was, like, yeah, they could bring it back. Red Saint Wild is done, like, as of this episode, but Michael Rooker may or may not come back. They did make a joke about, like, the internet talking about this too much and how Michael Rooker has been cast as the Flash, which is not true. But yeah, that's at least what they're implying there.
Well, I mean, that all sounds cool, especially for Michael Rooker. What a life he's living. But then it makes me think, like, what is the... This character was just then strange. Like, yeah. What was the point? Like, we got, like, a couple jokes because of him from Economos in previous episodes. And this, he just goes, he gets Elmer Fudded out at the very end. Like, felt weird. Like, what a weird idea.
It was just a through-line comedy beat for, like, three episodes or something, which I agree with you is weird because it seems like everything else is either currently tying into the otherwise strong central themes of the season or seems like they may pan out that way at some point. Certainly we got, like, Langston Fleury, who seems like just at first, a joke a minute antagonist, him giving that little moment to the episode where he passes by Economos after Economos books Peacemaker, being like, hey, thanks for doing that. That to me indicates, like, okay, they are bringing him over into the 11th Street Kids. And that's kind of where we end up with, is he is on the side of right, even though he's doing this stuff. But to your point, to bring it back to Red Saint Wild, Red Saint Wild's arc was like, I'm a culturally insensitive caricature, and now I've been eaten by eagles. That's it.
Like, if that's the point, if they're aware of how he's coming across, which up until now we haven't thought, I feel like, it has felt pretty straight, not a character that we're meant to be like. That's not the whole point of him, is that's inappropriate. But he, even the way he goes out, doesn't feel like it's a, like, haha, see? He got his just desserts for being a cultural appropriation. It felt just like, no, he happened to die because he killed another eagle. Like, they've sort of, if the whole thing was meant to be a comment or a take, feels like they haven't hit it hard enough on either end to make it true, make it feel that way.
Well, let me throw out another thing on the Red Saint Wild bet that we haven't really talked about here. So something that cropped up over after the last episode when he draws that eagle symbol on the ground and then in blood on his forehead is that is pretty much almost exactly the official logo of the Anishinaabeg Nation, which is a group of indigenous tribes in Ontario. They have a Thunderbird symbol. And there was a little bit of talk on TikTok from a couple of indigenous creators over there about, like, hey, you got to register this. And they don't mention it anywhere in the credits. I will mention I wrote the Anishinaabeg Nation to be like, hey, did they talk to you at all about this? And is this copyright infringement? And they got back to me yesterday, actually. I talked to Marcy Becking, the director of communications for the Anishinaabeg Nation and the managing editor of the Anishinaabeg News. And she said that HBO Max and DC Studios did not reach out to them, but they also didn't see it as copyright infringement because it's specifically for the Thunderbird logo the way that they have it. The quote was, the Thunderbird is a Dudum clan that may be drawn in various ways. We don't feel like there is any direct copyright infringement in this case. The reason I bring this up, and I'll say this on this podcast versus the news article I posted on comicbookclublive.com, which was hopefully more locked up with news versus this, which is just opinions.
Loose.
I think it's weird that they didn't reach out. I think that's strange because it clearly is like the same logo, very specifically taken from the Anishinaabeg Nation. And the fact if they're having like a character who is Captain Cultural Appropriation and they're just making a joke out of it, but they didn't take the time to be like, hey, cool if we use this. And they clearly would be like, no problem. Sounds good. It's not duplicative. Like, that's weird. I don't know.
Well, I feel like that is a case of cultural appropriation, technically.
Yes.
They appropriated the symbol to use to gesture toward that without actually doing the due diligence. And, I mean, it just, I guess we don't fully know until we see how this season ends when it comes to Red St. Cloud. But
Red St.
Like,
Wild.
Sorry, Red St. Wild. But, like, is the what is the point of this? If the point is a comment, then it feels like they should have really done that. It's sort of a reinforcing the idea that maybe this is just a not fully thought out idea.
Yeah. And we have spent a lot of time on that. Before we wrap up, though, any other thoughts on the episode specifically?
Well, we do have Judo Master going the other dimension, which I thought was an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what that means.
I wonder if this is obviously speculation, but we've talked about how it's probably an Earth-X situation where it's all Caucasian people, either Nazis and or the Confederates have taken over the DC-2. And I threw out there the second Ida Bio walks in, she'll be like, oh, no, which might still happen since they're heading there. But
yeah.
I feel like the same thing with Judo Master. So given that Judo Master and Peacemaker have been so at odds, he's going to want to listen to Judo Master even less than he would at a bio. So if they do go in that direction, Judo Master being like, hey, man, this is a racist dimension, that gives us at least a little bit of time of Peacemaker being like, no, leave me alone. You are my enemy. Get out of here. While it causes a seed of doubt to grow in him, versus at a bio telling him, he'd almost immediately be like, oh, shit, okay. And then we kind of move on from there.
Yeah, it actually maybe lets them play the reveal for the comedy of it a little bit more, rather than the earnestness that two friends would have about, like, mm-hmm. hey, this is really damaging to me and you and us being here. As opposed to Judo Master can be like, we can see him get fucked with a little bit, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like that. I like them actually developing Judo Master beyond being silent judo guy, and that's pretty much it.
Cheeto dust.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a fun actor, and I liked him tearing into Tim Meadows' character as well and saying he was literally going to rip off his penis. Fun, raunchy joke. So
yeah.
happy to see more of him. Anything else? Or shall we?
Let's not forget Manta Ray facts.
Yep.
Good. At the very end, we get really...
I have a question for you. This is going to be some crazy speculation. Is that going to pan out in any way? Like, are we actually going to have Vigilante's crazy animal facts somehow hit at the end of the season and something that he knows about animals will actually pay off in some way?
I think so. Either his knowledge will finally come through when he gets one right in an important moment, or the opposite, his lack of knowledge will come through and save them or screw them at the very end. I think it has to. This is the third time I think we're seeing it, and granted this was in the post-credits, but it does feel like enough of a runner that we're going to see something of it.
Well, cool. Why don't we wrap up? We've talked about a fair amount of speculation, but as we head into these secret episodes, episode 6, what's the thing you want to see the most? What's your thought there?
We need to just push the action. This has been sort of a little bit, we've been coasting. We've been ghost riding the whip, as they say, just letting the car was all revved up, and now we're just in neutral, rolling down a hill. It's time to crank it back up, shift it back in gear, and move forward. And I think all signs point to the fact that the show knows that as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have a secret episode, it means something important is going to happen. So I think we're going to get all of those reveals. We're going to get at least, I don't think we get the answer to this next episode, but we're going to get a gesture to what Argus's intentions are that we speculated about earlier. Feels right to me. But this next episode, I hope, is all about Peacemaker, realizing that he's in a bad place and having to not decide, but at least face the fact that he's probably in an Earth that seems cool, but is deeply fucked up.
I'll throw out something I don't want next episode is the internet has been going crazy since they found out about these next three episodes being secret in terms of throwing out like what the cameos are going to be, that we're going to see Booster Gold, we're going to see Blue Beetle, Batman is going to show up, all of these other things. And we are, I'm sure, going to get some cameos, particularly from Superman, maybe from some other things as well. We certainly throw out some possibilities there, but like, I don't want the cameos to overload what happens in this. I don't want this to be a cameo parade for these last three episodes. The show, even with the knocks that we've been giving, has been doing a really good job of keeping it focused on Peacemaker at his emotional journey in this season, particularly on Harcourt as well. And I want to see that continue. I want to stay with that. That is the heart of this show right now. And bring that to a satisfying close. And frankly, I could care less if we see Batman or not.
Same, yes. Especially Batman. I don't need a glossy, not important, just a showpiece cameo.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I'd like to see a cameo that is either a great joke or something that is gesturing toward another thing. But just to see, like, Batman's cape drift by, I definitely don't need that.
Yeah. Totally agreed. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Peacemaker. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad, come on, speed it up a little bit.
Dad, please, but thank you for the lesson on eating a strange mouse. Like, always let someone take a bite first. I see.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.